This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I'm Meera Sivasuthi. Professor Dr. Jamia Hassan joining Dr. George Lee, consultant neurologist, in our first year in 2016. Welcome. Happy New Year, both of you. How are you today?
I'm fine. Thank you. Happy New Year.
Happy George. New Year.
George, yeah. Where have you been?
Well, been away, mm-hmm. Enjoying a bit of a cold weather in the, northern part. I've been to Japan and it's been good. It's one of the few places where the currency is still relatively comparable.
Right.
Not too, not burning not too big hole in your pocket, really.
A little bird told me that you tried skiing. And what happened?
I stumble and then get rolled down the hills and create an avalanche.
That's all?
That's right. No, trying is a good word. It's like, trying very badly and then so eventually kind of limp out of the country, really.
Is that your first time skiing?
No, did that in university. That was when one was lean and mean and then now no longer.
Okay.
Yeah.
New Year resolution, losing weight, huh?
Oh, yes. Continue to do that.
Of
last
course.
Year, achieve
continue
a little bit.
Continue to
aspire. Aspire, mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Always, never give up. Prof. Jamia, how have you been?
I'm fine, thank you. I've been well.
We had you on last year for the womb transplant.
Yes.
Am I correct? Yeah.
That's
and today
right.
We're going to go full on to your area of expertise, which is one of it is the HPV, human papillomavirus. And January is the month of cervical cancer awareness. And so we've decided to kickstart with Prof. Jamia in the studio. So if you have a question for her or Dr. George, give us a call. The number is 0377 109 000. You can tweet BFM Radio or text 0162019000. Now, HPV is the most common STD. The HPV vaccine is now recommended for girls between the ages of 11 and 26, am I correct?
9 to 45, to be exact.
9 to 45, okay, all right.
Yes.
And 50% of parents, apparently, in the US, they're based on a recent research, have deferred giving their children the HPV vaccine until much later. Well, here, it's part of the National Immunization Program. Children get their vaccine, or girls get their vaccine at the age of what, 13?
At the age of 13.
13.
That is when they're Form 1 in school. So we're talking about only the girls, unfortunately, not the boys. I'm sure the boys is equally important. But at the moment, it's the girls. So the program has started a couple of years ago already. But I think Malaysia has done very well compared to US. US, the uptake, the completion of 3 dosing in US is less than 60%. It's what you said just now. The recent update is less than 50%. But I think the completion rate of the 3 dosing regime in our national data is much, much more impressive. That is 95% completed their 3 doses in the school immunization program. So I think that's awesome and a huge congratulations to the Ministry of Health and the DG, and of course the Minister of Health for sort of achieving it. And I think that's a huge accomplishment.
Because not many countries actually provide that sort of, free vaccinations for the children, do they?
It's not part of the National Immunization Program.
Australia is part of the National Immunization Program, and Australia started in 2006, but now there's included the boys in it. But we haven't. Hopefully, in the next coming years, when we are financially more secure, maybe we should include the boys. And that's my opinion. That's my wish list.
Right.
For Malaysia.
Absolutely. And while you're talking about the boys, I went around the office just now, just talking to everyone, just asking random boys what HPV comes to mind when I say it. And some of them said, yeah, it's the vaccine. Some of them were like, it's a woman's thing. I'm like, yeah, do you know that you can be affected as well? Really? They didn't know that. Boys don't understand how the virus can affect them as well. And it's all about cancer, isn't it? We talk about the cancer of the reproductive organs. And now we know that the virus also causes or brings about head and neck cancers. And over 90% take up of immunization. What does that really mean? What does that say about Malaysians? I can read it two ways. One is parents don't really understand it, so they just leave it in the hands of the doctors. And if you say it's good, great, go ahead, immunize. Two, that we really believe that this has got some benefit.
I think initially when this started, there was some hesitancy on the part of the parents, because when you talk about HPV and we talk about sexually transmitted diseases and the relationship with cervical cancer, and that's what the main one in our country, cervical cancer is still the third main cause of killer among the women.
Really?
Yes.
Wow, okay, so it's that's still, after breast cancer?
After breast cancer, colorectal, and then cervical cancer.
Right.
Third most common cancer.
Yes, third most common cancer in our country still. And I think 50% of our women, when they present with cervical cancer, especially in the rural areas, they still come in a late advanced stage.
So 50%?
When, yeah, almost.
So,
if you look
oh my
at
goodness.
The papers, yes. Because women doesn't want to, well, maybe one is, we still, a lot of women are very shy. They don't go for screening like the Pap smear program, the secondary screening tool for cervical cancer. And the uptake in our country is less than 40%. Mm-hmm. Even though we have done so much for the last 30 years, uptake is still very small. But if you look at countries where the uptake is more than 80%, at least the prevalence of cervical cancer is much reduced. So going back to this vaccine, so when it was first launched, this vaccine was 2006, and when we first had it in the country about 2006, when the government decided to sort of maybe give it to the girls, there was, of course, some hesitancy in the part of the parents, because the hesitancy is because when you say this vaccine prevents cervical cancer, they're not reading the cervical cancer.
Mm.
They say this cervical cancer can be due to sexually transmitted disease. If you have more partners, then you're at higher risk, mm-hmm. which is in essence it's true. But the worry is then they say if you give this vaccine, then you're making them more promiscuous, and that's absolutely not true at all.
The focus becomes a moral issue
yes.
rather than a health problem.
That's right.
Yes.
Okay.
Initially, it was a hesitancy, but after awareness program and the Ministry of Health and the newspaper, media and so on, so it sort of suddenly is a prevention for cancer. It's a good vaccine, and I think we should run away from this sensitive issue, but I think we should focus on cancer prevention, and that's a good thing to do.
Because not many vaccines can prevent cancer.
Yes.
So, you know, like,
yes.
for example, hepatitis B. Mm-hmm. You know, hepatitis B, in a sense, is a vaccine that will prevent hepatoma.
Cancer.
That's right.
Yes.
And then, technically, it is also a disease that can be transmitted by sexual contact, because with bodily fluid exchange or blood product exchange, that can produce that as well. But you don't hear that sort of resistance. You don't get that sort of like, apprehension when it comes to hepatitis B. Everyone willing to do that. I find that quite extraordinary. Do you think it's because in the beginning, how we sell this vaccine or how we actually bring this out in public arena, the message kind of get mixed up with sexual issues?
Well, we know this association with cervical cancer with HPV viruses for more than 30 years.
Mm.
And it was not so much people don't think a direct causal relationship at that time, but we know now clearly there is a link,
mm-hmm.
and there's clearly a link between HPV and sexually transmitted diseases, and we also know the link of HPV virus to cervical cancer.
Right.
So that's where the prevention comes in. So people always think about the sexual issues, but forget about the prevention to cervical cancer, mm-hmm. because if you can have something to prevent a cancer, I think that's a
this
huge.
Is right. That's right. It's a no-brainer.
It's a no-brainer.
It's a no-brainer. If you take three, even two vaccines now, you don't get certain cancer.
Yes.
I think if I can turn back clock, I definitely will go for that vaccine, right? But we're going to talk about the position I'm in. Mm-hmm. Let's go back to the very beginning. Can you tell us a little bit about what HPV is and how many different type of HPV can cause cancer, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. what sort of protection are we talking about here?
Right. Now, HPV virus is what we call human papilloma virus, because it causes papillomas in some of the virus. So it means in layman terms it causes warts. But there are more than 150 subtypes of HPV virus, and they are divided into high-risk subtypes and low-risk subtypes. The high-risk subtypes of HPV virus probably is about only maybe 20-25 subtypes, but these are called high-risk because they are oncogenic, meaning they can cause cancer.
Mm.
And not many of them, a handful of them cause cancer. And the commonest one is HPV 16 and 18. Now, 70% of HPV 16 and 18 cause cervical cancer. And the other 30% come from the rest of the high-risk oncogenic virus, like 45, 52, 35, and so on. But this HPV 16 and 18 also cause anal cancer. That can affect the men and the woman. It can also cause penile cancer and, of course, oropharyngeal cancer. It's the same virus.
Mm.
It's not different. So meaning to say, this virus affect the females as well as the males. But because traditionally we always associated HPV virus with cervical cancer in females, so the males think that they are spared. But that is not true because histologically, the anal canal and the cervix are almost the same.
Right.
So that's the reason why the HPV virus attack the cervical area and, of course, the anal canal. And, of course, the men and the women are equally susceptible to this.
Mm.
And the other low-risk HPV virus, the most common one is 6 and 11. That's a subtype 6 and 11. Now, this 6 and 11 cause 90% of genital warts.
Right.
Now, genital warts are not cancer, but the thing is with genital wart, it's a
lifelong
pain, problem. Yes.
Discomfort.
It's painful, discomfort.
Unsightly.
And then it's, and it can come off and on it, and for the rest of your life, you may be able.
Yeah,
you may
I read somewhere in Australia, even treating genital wart, it constitutes a huge amount of money that drained the healthcare because the visit repeatedly to the GPs to get cauterizations and all sorts of things obviously impose a lot on the sufferers and also drain the healthcare. You know, so it is clearly a no-brainer to do that. How do people know whether they've infected with HPV already?
Well, 70% of us who are sexually active will be exposed to the virus in our lifetime.
Is that
so
right?
That means in this room, if you say 10 people are sexually active,
well,
7 of us.
In this room, most of them are not sexually active, probably. Like,
The problem is, you may be affected by the virus, but it does not necessarily you will be infected by it.
Right. So who started it? Is it a boy or girl?
I was going to ask who's started it, right? And why have we decided to vaccinate the girls? Why have we prioritized the girls over the boys?
Well, I think in our country, as I said just now, cervical cancer is the number 3 killer among the women in Malaysia. And the anal cancer, let's say, for the men is not the...
It's very
it's
rare,
not the three,
right? Relatively
three killer,
rare.
Yes. So when you look at burden of disease, so burden of disease will be more on cervical cancer. So it makes sense for the government, if they have only such amount of money in their coffer, which one to give the vaccine, of course. If you want to reduce the healthcare burden, will be the cervical cancer. That's the reason why I think they sort of put their money on cervical cancer. But even there, they're only sort of giving the vaccine to a small cohort, which is the 13-year-old girl. So the catch-up cohort would have to either pay themselves or, you know,
so my question to you is, does it work? I mean, you're saying that it covers 70% of high risk.
Mm-hmm.
So does that translate to it will cure or it will prevent 70% of cervical cancer? Does that translate to such a statistic?
So if you look at data, of course, when you talk about all this kind of vaccine or anything, only data in medicine, you have to rely on evidences.
Time, right.
Yeah, you have to rely on research, evidences. So when the vaccine was sort of formed in 2002, so they had a huge cohort where they gave this vaccine, they follow up in terms of amnesic response, immunogenic response. Now, when you talk about the HPV virus, which is oncogenic, causing cancer, looking at cervical cancer, from the time you get infected or exposed to it, only about 10% of us will have a persistent infection. So who are those 10% that maybe had persistent infection? Because those are, their immune system is not robust enough to sort of clear the infection. Now, this persistent virus infection, HPV virus infection, will take about 10 years before, 10, 15 years before it sort of causes cervical cancer. So they have a long pre-invasive stage. That's the reason why women are encouraged to do the pap smear. right. because of the long history of that. So if you take a vaccine, George, if I give you a vaccine, it says, like, to prevent cervical cancer today, I will not see a reduction in cervical cancer until about 10 years down
right.
the line.
Okay.
So you would have to infer on some other efficacy of the vaccine. I said just now, like, say we have two types of vaccine. One is quadrivalent vaccine, which is against specific HPV strain 16, 18, oncogenic virus,
mm-hmm.
and the Loris 6 and 11, that is quadrivalent. And the other one is bivalent against 16, 18. The bivalent is only for girls, whereas the quadrivalent is for both girls and boys. So when you look at the quadrivalent vaccine, they have the 16 and 18, which 90% cause genital warts. So if you look at Australia, for example, you look at as the world data, because they used the vaccine for their cohort in 2006, but they have shown within a couple of years of introduction of the program the tremendous reduction in the STD patients, especially coming to their clinic. And they see a huge reduction in genital warts. And even in the men who are not being vaccinated, seems to have such a reduction. Meaning to say they have vaccinated quite a lot of girls, so they sort of have built some herd immunity. Mm-hmm. So you also sort of transfer to the others who are non-vaccinated. Now, looking at that, it says that the vaccine works. No, if you take the vaccine, the risk reduction of preventing genital warts with this quadrivalent vaccine is more than 90%.
Mm.
And data also shows in the 9 to 25 years cohort, girls and boys in their origin data, if you take the vaccine, prevention is also more than 80%.
Right.
In terms of preventing the high-risk virus. So how do you look at? They look at also to the pre-invasive occurrence of pre-invasive cancer before the actual cancer. And to look at the reduction of cancer, you have to wait for a while, maybe 10 years from the time.
At least.
Australia probably have some data
yes,
this year.
Mm. Yes, yes.
It's been 10 years
mm-hmm.
since.
Yeah.
We introduced
2006.
We introduced it in 2000.
We introduced, I think, 2011. So this is the third cohort.
So it's this is the fifth year.
The 10, yeah.
So we still have some way to go. That's all right. But, you know, it'll be interesting to see what Australia has.
You know, I'm pretty certain that there are listeners out there who have heard about HPV virus and actually have questions about the efficacy and also the safety, mm-hmm. because there's always those hysteria. Yes.
You don't
when
have
it comes
to talk
to
about
any.
The listeners, because I haven't vaccinated my children.
Right, okay.
Yes, and right. it's getting late.
Yes, well, it's getting late yes. because, you know, we're statistically, you know, how old are your kids again?
13 and 16.
13 and 16. Statistically, I read somewhere, of course, in the United States, 60% of girls at the age of 16 had already had their first sexual contact,
yes,
right?
Hence the problem.
Hence the problem. So, you know, how important it is to capture that group of patients.
Preteens.
Yes, which is what we're going to talk
that's
about.
That's what I kept seeing in the research. Preteens. You need to catch them in the preteens. And that's the problem. Parents or pediatricians are deferring in the US from recommending the HPV to the parents for their children to get vaccinated because they think they're too young. That's not the case.
And you can join Mira in those questions to bombard Professor Jamia to find out why do you have concerns when it comes to vaccines.
I do, and I'll share that with you up next on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I'm Mira Sivasodhi. Dr. George Lee, consultant urologist, back for his first show in 2016.
Thank you.
And we're kicking off the year of talking about the human papillomavirus. How exciting.
Yeah, that's right. In conjunction with the Cervical Cancer
Awareness
Month.
That's right. We have Prof. Dr. Jamia Hassan. She's a professor in the Department of Obstetrics and Gynecology, Faculty of Medicine, University of Malaya. I'm sure she's got a lot more of her titles. I've just kept it simple. We're discussing HPV. I mean, Malaysia introduced the immunization program in 2011. We've done quite well, as you said, Prof. Jamia. Our sort of protection or our uptake of the immunization has been about more than
95%.
Yes. Fantastic.
Compared to the Western
the
countries,
yes.
Where are they optionals in US and UK? And also, you know, parents are given a choice because this is a program.
George, we have a choice here, don't we?
Can you opt out? So,
yes. The parents are in consent if they don't want their daughters to be vaccinated, yes.
And in our country, can you opt out of MMR if you choose to do so?
Well, at the moment, because you just heard, I think recently they're going to make it compulsory for our children. But previously, yes, it's not compulsory. So I know some people who doesn't give vaccine to their children.
I know some people who've opted out.
Right.
Yeah,
okay. So. I didn't realize that was I just thought in our country, everything can just be, you know, I guess, nudge upon. Right, okay.
You've got to blame Andrew Wakefield for a lot
right,
of this,
okay, of course.
we were talking about concerns, as far as the vaccine is concerned. You asked me, George, why I haven't vaccinated my children. Yes, I do have concerns. It's a relatively new vaccine, in my opinion. And I was just reading in Ireland about 10 parents have claimed that their daughter's health have deteriorated after receiving the vaccine to protect them against cervical cancers. And they have actually approached law firms and VIEW suing the manufacturers. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, it is relatively a new vaccine because they started sort of thinking about the vaccine in the late 1990s and in the year 2002 when they first sort of engaged the cohort to test on this vaccine. But having said that, there are more than 150 million doses have been given worldwide, and that's not a small amount. It's a huge amount.
And there were 10 in Ireland?
Yes.
Well, 10 have taken up a case.
All right.
Yeah, so it's huge. It's 150 million. Of course, vaccine is vaccine. There's no vaccine that's completely safe. There's always risk to it. But when you look at the claims and so-called the vaccine, especially the HPV vaccine, causing a death in one of the girls in United Kingdom, you remembered a couple of years ago, and the post-mortem inquest did not find any relationship between the vaccine and the death. And if you look at some of the claims on the vaccine causing premature menopause in young girls, and there are sporadic reports in the newspaper and even than that, but when you look at those, there are no direct link to say that it's related directly to HPV vaccine. So at the moment, if we are concerned, of course, I'm sure when we ask parents to take this vaccine, so they'll be concerned. But you can go to the CDC website, type HPV safety, they update their website
CDC
regularly.
CDC is for the listeners?
Center for Disease Control.
Atlanta. And they, because everybody is supposed to send to them any adverse effects, anything at all, anything at all, even if you have muscle ache 2 weeks after you have the vaccine, you can log it in. But does it really mean that it's related to the vaccine? So people still log it in. And you can look at all the side effects, and they will put the side effects there, any new updates. The same thing as WHO. Currently, there is no real concern of the HPV vaccine in terms of the adverse risk factors, especially like the menopause, premature menopause, neurovascular disease, or the vaginal pain, vaginal syndrome, and so on. So there's no real direct link, and they have not stopped this vaccine.
Right. I mean, so presumably, if it's unsafe, you will get the FDA withdrawn.
Yes,
this.
It will withdraw.
But I mean, it's gone through the rigorous trials, isn't
it? Of course.
So.
Yeah, but personally, I've given more than 2,500 vaccine doses to our patients in the hospital.
And these are not children.
And these are not children. These are all adults more than 19 years old.
Right.
To my medical student, to the staff of the faculty, to the staff of the hospital. And majority of my patients are young cohort, less than 26 years old. Now, the only side effects that we got in the last 2 years or so was two patients who had a vasovagal attack, meaning to say they suddenly had a low blood pressure. But they were scared first before taking the vaccine.
And,
within 10 minutes, they were okay.
It's
and
an injection
no other real
that does hurt a little bit more than the rest.
No. It's the same like any
other vaccine. I just had my first dose about a week ago. It wasn't that bad.
I've gone through childbirth, George.
<That's right.
laughs>
Seriously, it's like, you know, I thought about this. Okay, 2 years ago, I injected the children, right? You go, actually 3 years ago, I injected the children. At that time, one was at the age of 13, the other one at the age of 9. And it's like, you know, the girl might be a little bit younger, you know, and
at
then,
nine.
The other, yeah, at 9. And then, after the injection, because my focus purely was that this is cancer prevention, get on with it. And then only afterwards, my wife and I read up a little bit about it. And I kind of thought, really? Seriously? I never looked at that. And I looked through a few things and said, no mind, they'll live.
made you want to get the jab, George?
For the children, more for me.
For you.
For me, well...
Isn't it too late for
you? It's not too late, right,
not,
for me?
Well, if you look at the data, currently they have data for women up to the age of 45. But for the men, they have data up to the age of 26. But when you talk about vaccine, we talk about amnestic response, immunogenic response from the patient. So for the woman, even up to the age of 45, there is substantial immunogenic response. To the protections conferred, HPV vaccine specific strain is more than 80%. So there is no reason in my mind that the men will be different. And the men, as they grow older, the risk of them acquiring new HPV infection is higher than women. It's the opposite. And men, HPV infection slower than the woman for some reason.
I think always.
Trying to say is that as her age progresses, men are more promiscuous. It's like, I'm not doing it because, you know, at this age, trying to have a midlife crisis to be promiscuous.
We didn't say anything.
But the thing is that I'm purely looking at it in a kind of like cancer viewpoint. And it's like, you know, because what triggered me to think about it was the Michael Douglas situation. It's like, you know, it was an oropharyngeal cancer, right? It's like, you know, and I just think all these cancers that are affected by HPV are horrible, horrible cancer. I mean, mm-hmm. we're going to talk a little bit about cervical cancer. These are cancers that affect hollow organs, like, you know, for example, in the vagina, it will, I deal with many, many patients who had the cervical cancer that erode into the ureters, and then mm-hmm. they are really quite...
But that's advanced.
It's advanced, yeah. I know. But the thing is that you don't want to have those things, you know, because if you have a vaccine, simple thing that actually can potentially prevent you, I am for it, you know. So that's part of reasons why I went for it. And I really think that... I just wanted to show to myself, like, if my kids have to have it, I will have it. It's okay.
Okay. You know? All right. Yeah. You're just walking the talk, aren't you?
That's right.
And there's something interesting. When I went around the office, everyone thought that they had to have sex to contract HPV. Is that true?
Well, it depends what kind of sexual activity
sex.
Sexual intercourse.
Yeah, sexual intercourse. That's the main mode of transfer.
But it's actually contact, isn't it? I mean, the virus...
Oral genital contact. You know, mainly is sexual intercourse.
Yeah. I read somewhere that even though it is just genital-to-genital contact itself, mm-hmm. the first time it touches, the virus itself can transmit. Is that true or false?
Well, that's probably like genital warts. If you're talking about 6 and 11, maybe. But when you're talking about 16 and 18, usually during sexual intercourse, there is some microabrasion in the mm-hmm. cervix and the vagina or in the cervical area. That's how the virus usually goes into the...
So there's a breach of the...
Yes, there must be breach of skin.
Cuts as such.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. And these are microabrasion. You can't see.
Then the question of oral sex, does that play a role in the transmission of HPV as well?
Yes.
So essentially any organ that actually has contact with mm-hmm. the genitalia can potentially just transmit the virus from one surface to another.
Yes.
Okay. Interesting. So there you go. Yeah. Very educational, if you were wondering.
That's right.
Preteens. Why do we vaccinate preteens? Why is it more effective for them?
Because when they are young, their body system, their immune system are more robust. Mm. So if you give them a challenge, so this vaccine is actually a challenge. So the body will produce an amnestic response or immunogenic response. When you're younger and you produce a high immunogenic response compared to George here, who's older.
We're slowing down.
Yeah, so it doesn't. It's the same thing as us. So when they are younger and they produce a more effective immunogenic response, one. Second is before exposure to this sexually transmitted diseases, it's ideal. But doesn't mean that if you're exposed, you cannot take the vaccine. Because it's rarely you're being exposed or you contracted the HPV virus more than once. It's very rarely. And you may contract other HPV subtypes and not the high-risk subtypes. So that's the reason why we sort of not advocate you to test for the HPV virus, but to just take the vaccine.
Okay, all right. And, you know, parents in the US are hesitant to, or pediatricians physicians are not recommending the vaccine because they think that the children are too young and hence are not recommending it to the parents to get them vaccinated. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, vaccine is preventive. And the reason why we give vaccine to young cohorts, similar to like any other vaccine, is because one, of course, to protect them against like infectious diseases. Now you don't see smallpox anymore, so you eradicate polio, that kind of stuff, because the consequences to it is so high. But when you give it to young, because one is because of the immunogenic response. Two is to protect them before they're being exposed.
And which is the problem. A lot of the parents don't see or understand that the children are, in fact, in the age in which they could possibly become sexually active. And we are all in denial. We think our children will probably only become sexually active later
on.
At
35.
Possibly. Not really the case. You want to get them before they become sexually active. And that is the objective, isn't it?
Yes. Okay. Prevention.
So are you convinced now for your 16-year-old?
I am. I've always been convinced. Well,
but it's just a matter of
getting my behind to the clinic with them and getting the whole
It's okay.
Thing
we'll bring the vaccine to you tomorrow. That's right. Look, there are two things that I think. I mean, Mira obviously pointed out this about pediatrician in US. I mean, this is based on a study by Allison Kemp and in University of Colorado. Essentially, they sent out 582 request to look at pediatricians and family physicians. They realized that one third of them actually don't urge HPV shots for preteens. I mean, are you surprised by this study?
I'm actually surprised that the pediatricians themselves don't advocate a vaccine like the HPV vaccine as a preventive measure to HPV-related cancers, especially in young teens. And I'm surprised they sort of object to that. Because I think there are enough evidence at the moment to advocate it. And if the healthcare professionals, like the pediatrician, who doesn't support and advocate, then, you know, the message that we send to the public that this vaccine has a problem.
That's right.
You know?
Yeah.
And you say the preteen, we shouldn't be given the vaccine. So then we give...
After exposure, that's right.
It's the same vaccine. So what difference does it make?
Exactly. So, I mean, obviously that is alarming in the US to look at one third of them. I mean, some people argue that this is a knowledge gap. I mean, some of the say that because many of the family physicians and the pediatrician may not understand the link between HPV and the importance of preteens. Mm-hmm. Some people think it is a value judgment. What's
your
view?
I think there's another reason to it. Because if you look in the US or you look in the European countries, the prevalence of cervical cancer is very small.
Mm-hmm.
Why?
Because of the screening.
Because their secondary screening in terms of pap smear screening is so good, the uptake is so good. So you catch these people before they get the cancerous growth.
Right.
So they catch them in the pre-cancer and they treat them. So you don't see this.
So let's say in ranking in Malaysia, you said
different.
It's number three, right?
Yes,
in the US,
so
what sort of ranking are we
talking about?
It's
very low.
Right. I didn't realize that.
It's not very high if you look in US cervical cancer. Same thing, their ovarian cancer is also not high.
Mm.
Because your screening is so good, they pick up these people early enough. So that's why they don't see the vaccine need to be given early because the prevalence of the disease itself is low.
It's more pressing for us, actually.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's
the
more
case
pressing for us.
For the vaccine. Yeah. Or do you think if pap smears are free, more Malaysians will come forward and take it?
Well, at the moment, the pap smear is free in the Ministry of Health, but still woman doesn't go. A woman has many reasons not to go for pap smear. Mm. Even the professionals, they are shy, they don't want to see their male doctors, they have no time. But the thing is, it's an important secondary preventive measure, even though if you had the HPV vaccine. Because as I said just now, the HPV vaccine only has certain HPV-specific virus.
Right.
16, 18. You don't have any other subtypes. In the next 2 years, we'll have the nanovalent vaccine, which has better coverage, more than 90%. It covers more than 90% of the HPV subtype, but at the moment it's not. So they still need to go for their pap smear screening. But if they have the vaccine, then the frequency of going to screening can be much less. Instead of going every other year, they can go 3 to 5 years. That's the beauty of it. But I think even we provide it free, a woman doesn't come. Mm. So I think the one way to go is to provide HPV DNA screen.
DNA?
And which they can do on their own, actually.
All right, how do
and
you do
that?
And
it's available in Malaysia. Well, they can take their own self-sampling at home.
Just like a swabbed...
No. They have a introducer where they have a sterile water at the end.
Right.
And the woman can just insert in the vagina and flush it. And then it will absorb again, put it back into your container, and you can send to it to the lab. And they will subtype and see whether you have HPV virus. Now, if you have HPV DNA in that screening, then you know that you need to go for pap smear or cytology screen at least every year, because you want to catch when you're going to have the pre-invasive. But if you are negative and if you take the vaccine, you can come back for the next 5 years. Mm. You don't have to come back every year.
How accurate is tests like that?
It's more than 95%.
That's not bad at all. I always think of home kits as being inferior.
Yes, right, so exactly.
It's available in our country.
I mean, from what you're saying today, I'm actually enlightened with a lot of knowledge. In my opinion, what you're saying is that in light of the Cervical Cancer Awareness Month, there are two kind of movements that we need to push forward. Number one is highlighting the importance of HPV. Number two, in our country's context, is this importance of the pap smear, right? Okay.
Yes.
I mean, when you early on mentioned like 40% pickup rate, right? Mm-hmm. Are we talking about urban setting or rural
country,
setting?
Country, national one.
Yeah, I mean, is any different?
Of pap smear, 40%. That's very low.
Yes.
So normal recommendation, what age group, how often, and
at
also
the
what
moment,
accurate,
the recommendation
how accurate is
of, in our country says that, of course, we say if you're sexually active, but we say you start your pap smear screen about 21 years old. That's the same as the American guidelines. So starting from age 21, you can start your pap smear. So if you screen negative for 3 years consecutively, then you can do the next smear 1 in 3 years. But it's all cytological assessment. But if you take your vaccine, HPV vaccine, I think the way to go in future would be testing for HPV DNA, which is simpler and easier to do.
So if you're not sexually active, you don't have to do a pap smear?
You don't have to do,
a pap smear.
Right, okay. So, talk us through, talk the listener through what sort of like expectation they can have when they turn up to have these pap smears. I mean, where do they turn up to do this?
Well, they can go to the clinic.
We'll come back and have that discussion as to where to go and get your pap smears, and we'll also come back and find out more about the boys and whether or not Prof. Jamia thinks that we will eventually eliminate cervical cancer.
That's our 2016 wish list.
Yes, on the bigger picture, BFM 89.9. Welcome back. How are both of you today? And we're discussing the HPV, the human papilloma virus. And in the studio with us, Prof. Dr. Jamia Hassan. She's a professor in the Department of Obstetric and Gynecology, Faculty of Medicine, University of Malaya, together with Dr. George Lee, consultant urologist. Yeah. George, do you think all the boys should be vaccinated as well?
Right, okay, definitely. That's why I'm sitting here advocating it.
Definitely.
Well, the great thing is that, you know, Prof. Jamia always goes to East Malaysia advocating this both for boys and girls, right? Tell us a little bit about good work that you're doing in East Malaysia.
Well, for the last 3 years or so during one of our community projects with a medical student from the University of Malaya, so we go to many different villages in Sabah especially, and we find funding to provide a targeted group in the cohort or in the village that we're going to, where we do health screening program, we do other motivational activities with the children in the villages, and we find money to provide free HPV vaccine.
For both boys and girls?
For both boys and girls, yes.
Why is that, Prof? I don't understand. If it's part of the national immunization program, why do you need to get extra funds for the kids in Sabah?
Because, well, this is part of our CSR activity. But if you look at the national program, it's only immunizing the girls at the age of 13 nationwide. So everywhere in rural areas, in urban areas, you get the vaccine. But the catch-up groups doesn't get. That means more than 16, 18 years old, or and the adult doesn't get the vaccine, or boys, they don't get the vaccine. And these vaccines are not cheap. So they're quite expensive. So
well, how much are we talking about?
Well, in our hospital, one dose costs about 200 ringgit. So three doses will cost 600 ringgit. So there's a lot of money for especially the rural people to pay for. And even the urban areas also find that is a lot of money to pay. But that is in government setting. In private, it can go up to about 1,200 for three doses. So that's a lot of money. That's a huge money. So I feel that especially the boys or in the older cohort where they will not be able to get the advantage of the vaccine. So we give the vaccine to this group. So we will exclude all the girls and 13 years old. But we can only provide like for 100 students or the village and the kampong. So we've been doing that for the last 4 years or so. And I think it's important. Like I would say just now, I wish we can vaccinate the boys. But if we want to benefit from this herd immunity without vaccinating the boys, we must vaccinate all girls and also the catch-up, like what Australia did initially up to the age of 26. Then you get the herd immunity. You vaccinate as many girls as possible.
Do you think that's going to be successful? Because in my opinion, like rubella, you can never get rid of this condition unless you do both boys and girls.
Of course, that's ideal.
That's ideal.
Yes.
But it's just way too expensive.
Yes, it's way too expensive for the government to think about that.
Do you not see the cost going down?
In future, I think with it's just like hepatitis.
Actually, that's a great question because, you know, from my understanding is that obviously this is going to be a challenging year for across all industries and healthcare is affected as well. And I understand that there might be some rationalizations of cost, especially involved HPV vaccine. Is there going to be change of regime about how many doses you get and how is that going to reduce the cost?
Right.
Is that going to be effective?
At the moment, the government, when they first started this vaccine, it's a national program, they give a three dosing regime. It's what it's recommended according to the research data. So that is first dose for the quadrivalent, then 2 months later, then 6 months later from the first dose. And the bivalent for the girls only first dose, and later on they give it the second and second month and then 6 months, whereas the quadrivalent is first 0, 2, 6, again 0, 1, 6. And now the government is changing. Now we're giving the two dosing regime. Why are we giving the two dosing regime? From the initial cohort during the research development data, it shows that if the preteens or if the vaccine is given to girls and boys under the age of 15, three dosing regime, that means zero, we're talking about the quadrivalent because that's where the boys are involved. The bivalent, the boys is not involved. So in quadrivalent, the data shows that if you give the dose 0, 2, 6 and 0, 6, there is no superiority of the three dosing, meaning to say the immunogenic response of the two cohorts are similar. That's the reason why they say that in this cohort you can give a two dosing regime. But the only thing they're not saying is whether in future will it be the same in terms of outcome 10 years down the line, that then they would have to follow the cohort. So though currently the government has changed to two dosing regime following this recommendation, and that will decrease costs from three dosing to two dosing. So it reduces costs. But we don't want to compromise.
But it's equally effective, you reckon?
Because the data, the R&D data shows there's no inferiority. There's no inferiority to the three dosing, to the two dosing, to the three dosing. That means data shows that
it should be equivocal.
It would be the same. Okay.
Yeah.
We were talking about where to go for pap smears.
Well, you can go anywhere for pap smears. The private clinics, the family planning clinic, which is everywhere around the country, the general hospital, the government hospital, the private hospital. And I think the family planning clinic, there are more than 100 public family planning clinics around the country, even in rural areas. But still, women doesn't come.
Yeah, one, it's awareness.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, a month like this.
And secondly, you don't want to be judged.
Yeah. Well, a month.
No. I think women,
I like the way you said that, you know. Do you think women feel
there is
judged?
A stigma attached to cervical cancer?
No. The pap smear is not women are afraid of being judged. Women are afraid of the results.
Yep.
You
not
think women are afraid of... Because I always assume women are afraid of the invasiveness.
Not if they are not afraid. Well, they may be afraid of invasiveness, but they're also shy because our women generally are shy because the way their upbringing is, their religious culture, you know, ethnicity. There's something to do with it. We don't talk openly about sex, do we?
No.
So even in the 20s,
we're not openly in this room. That's all.
You know, I have to say, because of my shows with George, I can actually have very open conversations with my children.
Yeah. Well, actually, it's
they're facts. Yes. They're not.
They're part of bodily function that you need to reckon
but
with.
But even
with
in
or
this
without,
21st century, not many people can talk openly about it. No. So because of this thing, and of course now the women are also a major workforce, so there's no time, so they delay taking care of themselves. So the simple things like pap smear screening, to them you say, okay, I'll do it next month, next year, one year after year, they still hasn't got it done.
I hope that changes though, because parents can't even talk to their children about openly about their bodies and you know, sex. So I hope that changes, however, going forward.
Yeah. I mean, Prof. Jamie, you are in a tertiary centre, one of the busiest centres in the country. And a month like this, you know, Cervical Cancer Awareness Month, what sort of activities do you think can can help general public to overcome their fears, to come forward for pap smears?
Activities like this, talking to you and Mira.
Yeah, apart from this. Yeah.
And the other thing is having a sort of public forum in the public. And a discussion. And we also have banners in the hospital where there's on cervical cancer and HPV. So increasing awareness. But we also write a newspaper or something
sure.
like that.
Sure, okay. I mean, obviously we talk a lot about prevention today. Mm-hmm. Obviously time is also running out. Can you tell us a little bit about how detrimental is cervical cancer if it's discovered late?
It is. It is a huge problem when it comes late because the chances of cure will reduce tremendously, one. And you know, the side effects of all these advanced cancers, especially to not only to the patient, to the family. And, of course, it's a lot painful to the patient.
Yeah, and we're talking about high degree of mortality.
Yes.
Right.
Absolutely. Yeah. Because it's so advanced, isn't it? And it's a very aggressive cancer.
Yes, and cervical cancer is one cancer in women where we can screen because the cervix is hanging outside. It's not like ovarian cancer or breast cancer, even it's very difficult to screen. But cervical cancer, you can screen with pap smear, yet we're not doing very well with that.
Mm-hmm. So it's screenable and preventable.
Preventable, yes. Absolutely.
And we are still kind of left behind in dark ages.
We're still hesitant to give the
HPV
vaccine.
And you know, because one thing that shocked me was that you said something along the line of something more than half of people presented to you are already at the point of no return.
If you go to rural areas, and you see every day people coming with advanced stage cervical cancer, and it's sad to see that.
Okay, so we need to talk more. Do you think we will eventually eliminate cervical cancer?
I don't think we will eventually eliminate. That is a wish list. That's a huge dream.
Why not?
It's a utopia.
I mean, we have with smallpox, and if it's a virus, there is a very high chance.
Yes. Provided the government come in with us and vaccinate the boys and the girl and the ketchup.
So what you're saying is that if we have a magic wand and everybody, boy, girls, catch up, everyone get vaccinated.
Yes, we have a chance.
You think we have a chance that this disease will eliminate from surface of Earth.
And improve our uptake on the screening program in terms of pap smear. Yes, we have a huge chance.
So there is a lot of hope, George.
That's right.
We just need to keep talking.
And then you just need to get your girls vaccinated.
I promise I will do it. Yes, 13 and 16.
That's right.
We'll come back.
It's the right time.
Yes, it is the perfect time. Thank you both very much for joining me today. Cervical Cancer Awareness Month. We were discussing the HPV vaccine and everything to do with cervical cancer and everything associated with the virus with Professor Dr. Jamia Hassan. She's a professor at the Department of Obstetrics and Gynecology, Faculty of Medicine, University of Malaya, together with Dr. George Lee, consultant urologist on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.